Hey, what's your problem? You have business problems? We have business solutions.
Perhaps?
Well, maybe.
Right.
Life is a fight.
It is.
In business, every day is a fight.
Somewhat.
So, hey, what's your problem?
Yes, thank you, John David Wells, as always, the big voice guy for the What's Your Problem podcast. Straight out of the Big D, and I don't mean divorce. Big D, Dallas, in Texas. He's got a radio show down there. Check him out, thewellsreport.com. This is the What's Your Problem podcast, where we talk to Middle Tennessee business owners and professionals about what is keeping them up at night. The one thing, it's always something that keeps people up at night in the worlds of entrepreneurship. So check us out at whatsyourproblempodcast.com. It is a video and audio podcast. If you go to the website, whatsyourproblempodcast.com, you can pick your poison. What's your platform you like to listen to us on? Is it Apple? Is it Stitcher? Podbean? Blueberry? All that stuff. Of course, YouTube and Facebook are there too. I am your host, Jim McCarthy, with jimmccarthyvoiceovers.com. And today, a somewhat returning guest from another podcast that I had, Mr. Arnie Malum. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm beautiful, man. Thanks for having me. I'm a two-time guest.
A returner, man.
Yeah.
Finally, and this time we're doing it in person.
My first ever podcast in person. First ever podcast sitting while talking. I'm usually standing and ranting about things.
We could do it standing. I just got to adjust the
camera. Yeah, we have to adjust everything. So I'm gonna try to adjust. This is part of my problem, is getting people to do something they're not used to doing.
That's right.
That's we all have that problem, right?
That's right.
We get in our lane. We get in our groove. We think we know best, and then, boom, change.
Exactly. And that always kind of throws everybody for a loop, but change is good.
Yeah.
Helps you break out of your lobster show.
Yes.
So what
it's
we do on the podcast.
It is. It's not good for me.
Not good for you?
That's right.
You just
want
to.
That's what everyone, change. You should change. Me? No, I'm not changing.
What we do to kick things off is typically the random five, and then we're going to get into your backstory and everything that I know of you, and hopefully I'll do a good job describing what you do. I'm pretty positive, because I champion what you do a lot, believe it or not.
Yeah, we want to champion other people is the way it should be.
That's right. So the random five is brought to you by itsyourshow.co. If you want a podcast like this one, that's what we do. From as much as you need us to as little as you need us. If you just want to show up and record, we can do that. If you want to do all the legwork and all that fun stuff and just want us to make an intro, we can do that too. Itsyourshow.co. Check it out. All right, here we go. Question number one, Arnie. Completely random. What really annoys you when other people do it, but you occasionally do it as well?
Other people do it, occasionally do it. Lane cutters.
Oh yeah,
lane cutters. I respect them because they have the wherewithal to find their way in and the gumption.
And the chutzpah.
Yeah, I was gonna say another word, but they get it done. Sometimes I have to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
I try to remind every time I see one and I feel my temperature rise. I go, hey, that's you. You've done that.
Yeah,
back off.
You've been there.
Yeah, just ease up a little bit. Yeah,
very cool. Good answer. Yeah. Question number two: what have you done a lot but are still incredibly bad at?
I've done a lot and I'm incredibly bad at. You tend to get better with every chance. I know I don't know how many people struggle with this, but there's plenty I'm bad at.
Yeah.
But I probably just stop doing it when I'm that bad at it.
Accept it and move on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think mine might be rollerblading. Or roller hockey.
Oh, yeah, it didn't work well with your body frame. Maybe.
At one time it did when I was 18, but yeah, that's a long time ago. Question number three, what are you too old for but still enjoy?
Ooh, I enjoy smoking cigars and drinking scotch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'll ever be too old for it, but certainly I tolerate it differently now as I age.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't have as much of an effect kind of thing?
No, it probably just that the effect in real time is the same. It's the next day might feel a little different. I might not sleep as well, and I might not, I let things roll over.
There's nothing quite like a cigar. You know it's a good cigar when you wake up the next morning, you don't feel like a dwarf defecated in your mouth.
I smoke almost daily, it's not, but when I drink a little too much, that tips me over the edge.
Yeah, yeah, we like the wine and cigars every now and then, my wife and I. All right, question number four. What was fun to do once, but you'll never do it again?
Oh, gosh. It seems like I say that a lot in terms of events I go to, big crowded events. Like, right. I tend to push away from crowds now. So things, the more people that are there, the less I want to go back.
Right. I get that.
Yeah. Yeah. I just get worn out by it.
Radio killed concerts for me.
Yeah.
If I go to see a concert these days, it's got to be good.
Yeah. That's just it's the pregame and the postgame. You got to, put it into the whole show.
You know what my answer is? A football game.
Yeah.
A professional football game. My wife and I recently did that once for the first time, and okay, we're good.
It's a 6-hour, 8-hour tour.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I had no idea how bad it was to get out of the stadium.
Yeah.
And question number 5, finally, if you could pick up any one instrument and instantly be a virtuoso at it, what instrument would be your choice?
I think guitar is the coolest.
Yeah.
Like, it's just cool. The piano's nice, but it's huge, and there's always... But a guitar, you can be...
Anywhere,
and you can do
on
anything.
The beach.
A harmonica wouldn't be bad, but it's kind of annoying to most people.
Yeah.
You can't play it soft.
Picking up a guitar and being able to shred like Eddie Van Halen was so impressive.
Or even just play a little tune. Warm the room a little bit,
and then bust into Eruption.
Yeah, if it's calling your name, get after it.
So you and I met back in the day. I was still in radio. You were at the head of CJ Advertising. And if you're have lived in Nashville for the past 15 years, and if you're in the advertising market, CJ Advertising, you would probably know of as a personal injury attorney marketing firm. Talk about niching down. I mean, just an amazing job. You started out at Channel 4, if I remember.
Channel 5.
Correct? Channel 5.
Close. It was so close.
I know, just went off.
Yeah.
At least I didn't say Channel 6 or anything, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, you started there as an account executive.
That's right.
Okay, and then you just decided, I can do this on my own.
Well, that's a nice way to put it. That's a nice way to put it, Joe.
In a nutshell.
Yeah. What happened was, you, when you're new there, you get what other people don't want. You get the accounts other people don't want. You occasionally get some good fish thrown at you. But what I was getting were accounts that no one wanted, which was personal injury firms. I ended up handling 2 or 3 firms. They just weren't. No one wanted to handle those firms, and so I did, and started to learn more than the average bear about marketing personal injury lawyers.
Right.
The other half truth or full truth is that I was doing a little more to help them market, beyond Channel 5, and so I got fired.
Right.
I was moonlighting on the job, still doing a great job. I would argue for Channel 5, doing a great job, top this, top that, but was taking it too far. I would probably. We have very liberal policy towards our people for freelancing because of that incident. But as the owner of the business manager, you want your people focused. I was a little unfocused. They fired me, and it wasn't that I chose to go off and start a new business. I got fired, and I had to start a new business.
Right.
I was when you get fired, or when I got fired in 1994, you're a little unemployable, much more so than today.
And you were fresh out of college at that point, or
I'd been with the station 4 years, so 4 years. I was a little unfresh. And so I'd spent a year with the bank. I spent 4 years at Channel 5, and then I was on my own. But by that time, I had developed an expertise in marketing law firms.
Mm-hmm.
And while they weren't fancy on me handling multiple firms in the same market, we could handle firms in different markets. And so we started expanding. One turned into 3, 3 turned into 6. Once we got to 6 or 8, we were the experts. And then it was a reasonably fun path, up to our peak at like 50 something.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think when I met you, you were rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
So 94, 95, you started.
Yeah.
And I met you, I want to say 07, 08, somewhere in there.
Yeah, like overnight success, right? it was still hard. It was still, you used the word earlier before we got on the air, grinding. Like, you finding the way, finding how many ways we can do it wrong on our way to getting it right, and stick to it.
And you had, married family at that time? Or
yeah, married in 95, kids in 97 and 99. And so, the great American dream, let's do it all.
So your kids, they came while you were getting into the business.
Yeah.
But at that point, maybe the business maybe had started, you know, getting a good grip and traction at that point, or?
Well, in that we, you know, about 3 years of you know, rubbing two nickels together to try to make right. it work. And then the next 3 years you felt a little better about it. And then, so about every, you know, the cycles would come in like 3 year sort of increments, but like most in business, you know, for the first 10, 12, even probably years of existence, we were running a business, but not like an entrepreneur.
Right.
We were running it like a solopreneur.
Really,
we were doing. I was shoveling as much dirt. I was, you know, doing proverbially as much as I could as the owner to make the business work, instead of getting others to make the business work for me.
Right,
right. I was doing the work. I hired people to help me get better at my job.
Right.
So when you study sort of entrepreneurism, you have the entrepreneur who creates the job for themselves, and we hire people to make us better at what we do.
Right.
It's the leap comes when you begin to hire people to do what you do and give them the resources to do it better than you do.
Duplicating yourself in a way.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And even improving upon, yeah. Right? Because you have a different perspective on it. So it's creating a process for an outcome rather than being the process for the outcome. And so I worked at being a solopreneur for 8 years. And then I'd even average out maybe 10, 12 years. Yeah. It wasn't until I read enough books, met enough people, had enough experiences that I could make the flip from a solopreneur working 80 hours a week, thinking I was creating success, to an entrepreneur who was creating success beyond me. And I'm not saying that I was a bad person before, that anyone doing solopreneurship right now is, you're figuring it out.
Yeah.
But you're also digging a deeper and deeper hole until you find your level. You become a small giant that says, this is the size I want to be. I'm gonna manage my life around my work rather than my work around my life. Maybe I got that backwards, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get
like,
it.
I'm gonna set boundaries. I'm gonna do what I, versus every day, every waking moment is work, which I did. So yeah. I did it.
But
I
just it seemed like, did you enjoy what you were doing? Did it seem like work or?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not going to say, I mean, really? it was, I mean, I remember distinctly that a good Saturday was one where I got home before like 1 mm-hmm. in the afternoon. Like I would wake up before the sun came up and I would go to work and I would spend Saturday morning from 5 a.m. to 1 p.m. just catching up.
Oh, wow.
That's the ultimate, you're in a solopreneur trap when you're spending your Saturdays getting the work done that you should have been doing all week.
Yeah.
And it's just not sustainable. You can sprint for 100 yards. You can sprint for maybe 400 yards. You can sprint for a mile, but you can't sprint for a marathon. And I was trying to sprint for a marathon.
Well, that's the work in your business versus working on your business conundrum.
Right. That's the flip. You have to, only the leader can decide.
Right.
Like you can tell me 1,000 times I need to do it. It doesn't matter.
But it still takes time.
And experiences.
Yeah.
And like I said, the books I read, the people I meet, the experiences right. I learn from, you can't, some people are born ready.
Yeah.
I was not. I'm a mm-hmm. technician at heart, and I had to learn how to be an entrepreneur. You know,
there's also the element of when you have people working for you, they want to know that you're able to do what they can do. So that makes a lot of sense. So it's like, yeah. Hey, I'm going to ask you to do something, but yeah. I only can ask you because I know what it's like to do it. I know exactly what it's to be in your shoes. So it sounds like you've kind of done it all.
Play both roles.
It's a necessary thing to go through when you're building a business, though, I'd imagine. You got to be a solopreneur till you can get to that point.
It is a path. It is the most common path.
Yeah.
And the again, I want to stress, there's so many people out there listening to me in different formats, and they go, well, I like being a solopreneur. Great. Manage that. Have the right expectations for your business.
Yeah.
To know that you can do that, it's a good thing. In fact, I would rather, as a consumer whether it's B2B or B2C, I'd rather work with the owner.
Yeah.
I'd rather you do the work. That's great. But as a business, if the owner's doing the work, there's a ceiling.
Yeah. There's only so much you're going to get done.
That's right.
Yeah. Because I mean, in order to scale, you got to be able to. It's buying more time, essentially.
Yeah, and that's what. So CJ Advertising, and then Next Legal Intake Professionals, our second business, were both businesses that once we figured it out, then like it was the hockey stick growth. Like we grew slow for 8 to 12 years, but when we figured out how to build the business around a process rather than me, then we got the real growth.
Do you think that's a typical yardstick? You've mentioned the 8 to 12 year growth age, if you will.
Yeah.
Do you think a lot of entrepreneurs understand it takes that long?
I don't know. And maybe I'm just slow. Like I'm slower than the average bear.
No, I'm not sure.
I think it's a path. I think that every entrepreneur, there's a path and that it's very intelligent for entrepreneurs to track it.
Right.
Right. Just understand whether you're in year three or year 23, what has your path been? You might measure it by revenue. You might measure it by profit. You might measure it by hours worked, good and bad. If you're an entrepreneur working 80 hours a week, that's different than an entrepreneur working 30.
Yeah.
And so pick a measurement, pick a KPI, measure it over time. And I think most will find that the early years take a different amount of energy than the latter years.
I understand what I do is there's only so much you could scale a voiceover talent. You know what I mean? I kind of have to be there to voice stuff.
Yeah.
What I can do is hand off all the production work to people. I just show up, I record, boom, you know.
And Jim, that's a great business model. I'm not distracting from the fact that you hire people to make yourself more productive.
Yeah. Yeah.
But another take on that is that you source other voice talents.
True.
And that you only do, you know, three voice talents a week, but you're farming out 30 or 300 or 3,000.
No, I want my voice to be everywhere.
Yeah, it's
I
different,
want it all to be
so
me.
So it depends on what your plan is, right? What your goal is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's funny in the voiceover business, a lot of people say, well, when you start a business, you know, some people have the mantra of start out with the end in mind and how are you going to sell it at some point and blah, blah, blah. Other people are kind of like, no, be in it for the daily grind. If you're starting a business to sell it at some point, someday, it's not the right reason to be in it. You know,
fall
in love with the daily hustle.
Yeah, some people fall in love with the thing they do, and some people fall in love with the
goal.
The goal.
Yeah,
and it's two different things. I would argue, and I've run. I'm on my sixth business, but only three of those were successful. So it doesn't really right. You have success and unsuccess, but when it's your baby, it's harder to hand off.
Right.
It's easier. You know, you were talking about, I need to know how to do it. Sometimes it's easier if you don't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because then you have to hire an expert. Right. And so there's pros and cons. The concept behind one of my favorite books and topics around this is Small Giants. If you haven't read Small Giants, if you're not familiar with the concept of Small Giants, it's about businesses who choose to be small on purpose, but be great.
Right.
And that is so awesome. Like some of your favorite brands are small giants who have said, this is where we want to be. And we're going to work like heck to get to here, but we're not going to grow beyond that. So growth isn't always the answer either.
When you had the aha moment, things started really clicking.
Yeah.
What did it seem easy at the time? Like, oh my gosh, why didn't I think of this?
Well, it was combining, looking back, it seems grander in the time. You know, you're spinning three plates. It's required. You have to change as a human being. Your business is trying to change. Your family's changing. There's a lot going on. There are certainly peaks of stress. Looking back, it's obvious.
Yeah.
Like in most struggles we have in life. But going through the storm, and that's why it's so important. Again, expose yourself to others. Not like in that way.
Yeah. But
expose yourself, I guess, to others' ideas.
Yeah.
Right. See, let people see your business and ask good questions. And it's okay to say, I don't know yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know yet. And so looking back, I don't know how we would have gotten there any sooner because I wasn't ready. The student wasn't ready.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm glad we got where we got.
There's a guy, are you familiar with Brad Lee, the real Brad Lee?
The real Brad.
The real Brad Lee. I actually produce the intro for his podcast. That's how he and I got acquainted. He's got an operation out in Las Vegas. He's actually coming to Nashville to set up an established shop here. He wrote a book called The Hard Way, and he's been in here a couple weeks ago. We talked a little bit about that. He goes, here's everything I've learned the hard way, so you don't have to. And I bring it up to him. I'm like, you know, don't some people just need to learn the hard way? That's how they learn.
And you can't. We try to tell people what it's like to be married or what it's like to have kids or what it's like to run a business or what it's like. It makes us feel good to talk about it, but most people aren't ready to hear it until they're ready to experience it.
Right.
My book is Worth Doing Wrong, kind of the same concept.
Yeah.
Like we had to get it wrong on our way to getting it right. That was the only way I was going to learn was getting it wrong.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, I'm stubborn and slow.
I still wear the shirt, believe it or not. It's a little tight on me these days, but I still wear it around the house.
Can you see my shirt?
I do.
Are we on? How do I look? Do I look all right?
It looks fantastic. Yeah. You always look fantastic. The shirt that Arnie's wearing is called, it just says wrong on it, but it's backwards. So when you look in the mirror, it actually looks right.
Looks good to me. It looks good to me.
And it's a constant daily reminder of I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
Is your wife a big fan of it? Or?
Yeah. She gets mad at me about the concept because when she has me put things together, And she's like, you're just going to bang on it till it's put together. Like, yeah. I'm like, it's worth doing wrong, babe. We got to get it done. But it's a constant point of she gives me a hard time about it a lot.
Now efforts, I guess, once everything's the traction started becoming tactile at the point in your business with CJ, you started directing your sights at culture creation, development, and improvement, correct?
That's right. That's right.
And I admire CEOs who do that because I believe that is their primary role.
Yeah. Well, right? You know, just like you asked me a previous question, hey, you said, hey, you decided it was time to break on your own. Well, they fired me. Mm-hmm. And in this case, you're saying, hey, you decided to make culture important in your firm. Because I had to.
Yeah.
Jim, it was because we were in an industry serving personal injury lawyers. Most people do not wake up every day and go, that's the industry I want to work in, right? So we had to attract and retain talent. Mm-hmm. And me screaming at people to do their job better and try to drive them towards success as opposed to lead them was not working.
Job harder.
No, it's you're just rolling a ball uphill and it's constantly falling. And so one time, you know, one potential team member said to me, look, I get it, but I don't want you on my resume. He didn't want CJ advertising on his or her resume at the time because we worked with personal injury lawyers and he didn't want that. And so it hit me that in order to attract and retain the right talent to make our business successful, I had to get culture right.
Yeah.
I had to be a place where people wanted to work and a place that people wanted on their resume. Because of the reputation we had for building people. And so we focused everything around how do we make our people the best they can possibly be, whether they stay or leave? How do we make them the best they can possibly believe so they think? So when you hear CJ advertising, it's a place to grow. And by doing that, we created a culture that people wanted to come to as opposed to had to come to.
And you had the validation. You had the the top places to work award several times.
Yeah, but once we set our mind to look great on people's resume, then all the other decisions seem easy after that.
I just had a discussion the other day. I was shooting video for one of my clients who's an auto dealership here in town. And, in the car business, culture is a big issue, whether they know it or not.
Oh, it's huge.
You know, they got primarily a bad to just vanilla culture.
They make personal injury lawyers look good.
But this particular group of dealerships is culture first.
Yeah.
You know, the CEO is all about culture, came up with the mission statements, the vision statements, and then the supporting columns, if you will, the pillars of what they believe in.
Yeah.
They call it their quiver of arrows. And they constantly develop it, work on it. They can detect the people who don't buy into it quickly.
That's right.
But I mean, in the beginning, it just started out with them just figuring out, okay, what do we believe in? You know, was that where the same kind of story with you? You just had it's more than just something you put on a wall.
Yeah.
You got to live it, right?
Well, it's do as if culture reflects leadership.
Boom.
100% of the time. If you're a business owner or a group leader or a team leader and you don't have the culture you want, stop looking around, looking for the problem. Culture reflects leadership. So if you have a problem, it's you.
Yeah.
And that's the mirror that's the hardest to look into. It's the hardest message to deliver to other entrepreneurs who want to take a pill and a quick fix and read a book. It's all those things, and culture reflects leadership.
Yeah.
And so I realized that in a moment when I heard the word spoken and I was ready to hear the message and ready to do something about it. And even then, it wasn't, well, we're okay now. Mm-hmm. It was years to create the culture that someone might want on their resume.
Yeah.
Not hours, not days, not months, years of intentional effort, thought, sustainable ideas that helped people become the best humans they could be that happened to work at CJ Advertising.
Right, right.
And Legal Intake.
And that's kind of what turned into what you're doing now with Better Book Club.
That's right.
Now, I'm going to try and articulate what it is. I've actually talked to the guy the other day at the Mercedes store.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, there's an organization, because I asked him about what do you read? What do you feed your mind with? And
yeah.
He talked about different books that he reads and everything. I said, would it help if you had a way to encourage your employees and your staff and your team to read the same thing you're doing, you know, and from the top down, you know?
That's right.
And I said, what if you had a way to incentivize them to do it, where they can get rewarded? He goes, that would be amazing. I'm like, go to betterbookclub.com.
Betterbookclub.com.
Did I do it?
It's beautiful.
Nice.
It's beautiful. And here's what's different. Here's what you'd expect, and what's different is that I'm gonna pull back on one thing you said.
Sure.
If you want people to read what you've read, it's probably not the club for you. Right? It's don't read what I've read. Read what makes you a better human. A better parent, a better spouse, better with your finances, healthier, help you think clearer, philosophy, whatever it is. In addition to hiring, management, marketing, leadership, all those things. But I'm not going to tell you what to read any more than I can tell my kids what to do, or sometimes my team members exactly what to, like. You make yourself better, and every time you read a book that remotely makes you a better human, I'm going to reward you for it.
Right.
Because I don't care as much about the book as much I care about the habit.
Right.
If I can gift you the habit of reading, then I've changed your life and maybe your family's life forever.
Right.
And
right.
That's the ultimate improvement to the person that makes people appreciate where they are, and even when they leave, the opportunities they got when they were there,
mm-hmm.
right? Some of our best referrals came from team members who have moved to another position, but then referred people back to us to jump into what we were cooking over at CJ.
Interesting. So, I mean, was that something you were developing while you were at CJ?
Yeah, Better Book Club was this idea that I did the same thing all entrepreneurs do. I read a book. I go, oh my God, my team has to read this. I go buy 20 copies. I pass them out. I said, read this book. We're going to talk about it in 4 weeks. In 4 weeks, I call a meeting. They come in the room. A third of the people maybe have read the book. A third have definitely not read the book. A third have skimmed the book. And they're all mad at each other because the people that read don't like the people that didn't. The people that didn't think the ones that did are brown nosers. Then all I do is do what I'm doing right now, is rah, rah, rah for 60 minutes. And everyone just wants it to end.
Right.
And I know that people out there listening go, no, the way I do book club's better. It ain't.
Right.
Your people don't want to do it. They don't want to read. Your last book is not their next book.
Right.
Their next book is the one they choose. And so betterbookclub.com lets you set up a massive, very inclusive library that you can add to it and to, as much as you want, and let your team members pick the book they want to read, but allows you to track it, monitor it, reward them, encourage them, and help them encourage each other. It puts more books in brains in a sustainable way. I'm pitching now, baby.
Yeah, I hear it.
Than anything I've ever seen. And I would challenge anybody out there listening, if you know of a traditional book club where the leader owner is telling people what to read and that is sustainable and successful, I'd like to hear about it, because I don't know of one. I know the myth is out there. I hear people say, well, we did that 3 years ago, or we did that twice, or I want to do that. But I rarely hear business people say, oh, we do that regularly.
Right, right. So basically it's an organizational structure for people and business owners and leaders to track.
We used it at CJ to put books in brains of our people, to get them thinking how to be successful on their own and their group and the business. We figured out if we grew our people, we could grow our business.
Yeah.
If we can't grow our people, we can't grow our business. And books, and by the way, listening is reading, right?
Yeah.
You can Kindle, you can read the hardcover. But to make you read something when you don't have time to read it or don't want to read it is almost counterproductive.
Yeah, because it's an obligation at that point.
That's right.
They should want to do it.
They want to do it.
What are some of the incentives that employees can get? I mean, is it up to the leadership?
It's absolutely. But the number one best practice in most, 98% of the incentives is cash.
Right.
Good to great, $100.
Yeah.
All right. Basically, a good book will get you $100. The system's all automated. It's all paid through gift cards. A small book like Who Moved My Cheese might be $25.
Right.
Right. And so it's all based on basically length of the book. It's totally controllable. The what's in the library needs to be abundant, but you don't want like Shades of Gray in your library. we don't need romance novels. We need things that make people
Why
better.
Is everybody wearing leather all of a sudden?
Yeah,
I mean,
really weird, yeah.
What is with this? Did we say something about the work?
So it's if everybody reads something different, then you get that many more ideas in the thing. So that's the concept. Better Book Club time. If you want people to read what you're reading, it's not for you. If you want to hear yourself talk about a book for 45 minutes, it's not for you. If you want your people to truly grow where they have the best opportunity to be great, might be for you.
So I mean, I love the line. Helping you get books into brains.
Yeah.
Marinating their mind in good stuff is what I call it. But it's what my thing is be them centric. Hashtag be them centric.
Yeah.
And it's a them centric way of, hey, you're going to be rewarded. Yeah. I'm not telling you what to read. Just pick something and move with it, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's for the companies that use it. We have clients in almost every continent.
Really?
We have clients in Australia and in Europe and in Mexico and in Canada and throughout the US. The perfect size company is between 12 and like 75 people, although mm-hmm. we have companies that are much bigger. And we have, you know, 5 and 8 people shops that are running. It's free up to 8 people.
Right.
And then you start paying $2 a member after that.
It's just wash, rinse, repeat in a way.
Well, it's...
Is it huge for you? I mean, that's a big business.
Is this business successful? We're getting there.
Yeah.
Is it making an impact?
For sure.
Oh my God. Like I really think
that's a no-brainer.
That if I can get, and by the way, people think, oh yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to read a book a month.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to read a book. If you can get your team to average a book a quarter, you're world freaking class.
Yeah.
Freaking class. Oh, we read more than that. You don't.
Right.
Like I know that I might, I read about a book a month average. Right. Some people, I read a book a week. Most people don't read a book a year.
Yeah, I know.
So to get your team into the one book a quarter, 2 books a year sort of mentality, it for us, Jim, it was a game changer.
Right.
It put more ideas in more brains faster and more efficiently than anything else we did. And we did a lot. We spent thousands and thousands of dollars sending people to conferences and helping and bringing in speakers to teach our people stuff and to learn new opportunities. But nothing put more knowledge in our team's brains than Better Book Club.
It's definitely, it's energy or information being dispersed over time versus the shot in the arm of a seminar.
And it's so, right? It's so rare that I read this and therefore it's perfect. It's how we think when we read or listen either way. Mm-hmm. So anyway, enough about that is, you know, I'm not paying you for a commercial announcement. So
intrigues me.
Put a bow on that thing, but it works.
That's why I had you on is because it intrigues me. I believe in what you're doing. You know, I believe if anybody did that.
What's amazing is if you can get a team member to start reading, it may change how they perform at work. We certainly hope it does. That's sort of the goal of this thing. But also, if it makes them a better parent, if it makes them a better spouse, if it helps them be a better family member, a better contributor in a neighborhood, like anything it helps them become better at, then that's – we've also – done what we, as entrepreneurs, as business owners, as group leaders, we've helped move people in the right direction.
Yeah.
The people we meet, the books we read, that's what changes us.
Let me ask you this. I mean, do you guys, I would imagine if they go into the betterbookclub.com platform, they could see, do you guys do books of the month and promote them and stuff that?
We load it with the top 100 books that are, it's purely crowdsourced. By the way, they may not be the top 100 books, but they're the books that most of our members are reading, like the first 100 books in there. And then from there, it's crowdsourced with your team. As your team members read books, they put them in, they become, now you can't add a book unless you've read it. People go, want to add these 10 books. Have you read them? No. Well, you can't add them.
Well, like, wow.
You can't put a book in that you haven't read.
Right.
Right? So it's a crowdsource mentality.
So over the entire platform, you got the top 10.
Yeah.
And then you can actually aggregate it down to the company level and say, hey, here's a book.
Well, that's right. The clubs are company level clubs. So when you join, if you're out there and you're going, you're just an individual and you want to join, it's not for you.
Right.
We're not Goodreads. Go join Goodreads if you want that. This is, every club is a closed chamber mm-hmm. for that company.
Right.
I just happen to be able to see the aggregate data.
So even releasing that to the individual companies, like a top 10 overall.
Yeah, we do that a lot. Okay. You'll get an email every month to say that this month the top books were this and for the quarter they were this. And like you see that a lot.
Because you know what I'm hearing is, okay, hey, you know, Ed Milet's got a new book out, you know, Power of One.
Yeah.
Right. And all of a sudden, if that starts trending on your platform, Ed, we've got a podcast. We got to talk about your book.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good way for you to meet people, I would imagine.
It has all kinds of offshoots in terms of getting just being a authenticator of good content.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a cool look. We've worked hard on the platform. It's not perfect. I spend money making the program better every month.
Right.
We add new features, new benefits, new engagement, new gamifications. Just trying to get it better and better to get this thing off and running.
That's something I would do on your behalf. I would actually do the podcast once a month and interview the top author of the month.
Yeah,
top book.
Yeah, make it just to bring it. Yeah, and then we promote it back through our people. So it's a loop. Yeah,
and now they have if they listen to the podcast, they have a reason. I'm going to go check that book out now.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, a little more incentive to
right.
Or validate that they loved the book, right?
Yeah.
Or hated the book.
But I think that there's a ton of potential with, as you know, if you wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
But on another side, you've also done, you're doing speaking.
That's right.
You're an author now, podcast host. It's funny. I had Jason, you know, who Jason Duncan is, he's kind of big in the Nashville entrepreneurial scene as well.
Yeah. I don't think I know him, but tell me more.
So he was on one of my episodes, I want to say about 10 episodes ago. Great guy. He came in, sat down, had a great conversation. He said something that was so profound, and I need to make a clip out of it because it would really help my podcast business. He goes, it's almost more impressive to be a podcast host these days than an author. Really?
Yeah. You're bringing out the best in people.
Yeah.
You're bringing out the best. Now, I'm not a podcast host. I want to be clear. I am on a podcast every month, but let me tell you, it's so much easier to be a guest than a host.
When you're driving the bus, it's a whole different shebang.
It is to give a talk and I'll speak, somewhere between 4 and 8 times a year. That's hard work, preparing for the audience and getting ready. Coming on a podcast, let's just talk.
Easy.
Let's have a conversation about me.
Kind of like
my favorite. Like,
let's talk about you.
Let's talk about me a little bit. Yeah.
And that's totally, that's how I designed this podcast.
Yeah.
And as much as my client's podcast as well. Cheap plug. It'syourshow.co. Check it out. So you're doing the speaking thing. You've got the Worth Doing Wrong. That's the
book
premise of your speaking, though.
Right? It is. It's really the story of CJ. It's how everything you asked me about. How did we get from an ad agency struggling to get talent in a very unique niche to a success? We can deem the agency. So I sold the agency in 2018.
Yeah, that made me really sad.
Well, here's what's great. Our biggest client at the time bought it, and they became our biggest client by following the same culture principles as we set forth in the agency. So it was a natural cultural fit.
Yeah.
They continue to build our people. They continue to build upon our values. They continue to understand the link between treating your people well and how your clients respond. And so that business, they've retained 75% of the clients, at least probably 80%.
And that's a good number.
They've retained 75-80% of the people. The people that were with me for years are still at CJ doing their best work.
That's good.
So it was successful in every way possible.
But how did it make you feel? I mean, it was like a baby,
It is absolutely.
Rip your heart out kind of thing?
Absolutely. It was very similar. I sold the businesses about when I sent my kids to college.
Oh, wow.
And so very similar. Like, it's just a different feeling. And my kids went hours in two states away at least. One was in Boston, one was in Ohio. So it wasn't just like they were next door. So it was literally like pulling the thing that I had worked on for 18 years out of my arms. And you do that, you do it both willingly and with confidence, but with also just a bit of tug at your heart.
I bet. What do you do in that first year or two? Did you kind of hang out on the beach or?
Most of what
we all dream about, right?
Yeah, we just do, but it's not, we all need a path. We all need a passion.
Purpose.
We all need something to do. And so I've found a way to make the time go by. But
the day after the sale happens, what is Arnie doing?
Well, again, very busy time in our lives as we had one in college, one going to college. And so I could brag about my kids way more than Better Book Club, but they certainly took up our attention. We got to focus our efforts on them and their paths for about a year.
Nice.
And then I've been sort of just tinkering, been doing some mentorship, been doing some speaking, just been doing things at my pace.
Yeah.
At my pace.
Because you have the clout, the credibility and the horsepower to do a lot of this stuff. I mean, more so, what frustrates me is when you see the guys out there that are trying to do the speaking, the influencing, mentoring, yeah, and they don't have the battle scars. They don't have the pedigree, you know?
Experience is teaches us all great wisdom.
And it's and it frustrates me because I you know, as long as I've known you from a distance, I mean, we're not, you know, great friends, but we're certainly more than acquaintances. I've always admired what you've done with culture, the battle scars you've earned, the pedigree that you have. And I'm like, gosh, dude, you got to be bigger than you are.
Yeah.
You should be bigger than you are.
Well,
you
know? I appreciate that. I appreciate the compliment, but and also the challenge to you know, grow and, you know, continue on a path.
And that takes podcasting, man. I mean, you just got to get a constant podcast.
Maybe so. Maybe the Better Book Club podcast with Jim McCarthy is in the future.
Possibly. Yeah. I'm game. Yeah. I'd love to interview some of these authors for sure.
I know. And they're a willing participant. So it's
They really are.
Yeah, it'd be weird for them to say no.
You know, have a Gary Vaynerchuk, who's a multiple New York bestseller author, you know, and on a platform like that, be like, hey, oh my gosh, your book is blowing up. We need you to come on our podcast. Not even asking. We just need you. We expect you.
You know, that's
the posture.
Be a part of this thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And we can help, you know, push the boat. Why wouldn't they do it? Right.
Well, it all comes down to this. If enough listeners today sign on with Better Book Club, then That gives us pathway there.
What is the next 5 years? Where do you want to be in terms of, you know, the amount of subscribers, things of that nature?
You know, that thing is organically gaining ground. Right. We will accelerate it, but it is not what I spend, you know, 8 to 12 hours on a day. It is about 3 to 4 hours a day that I give it. On a whole different path, my wife and I bought a farm down near Columbia, and I've spent 3 days this week totally working on the farm.
Isn't that crazy?
And it's a different kind of work. You're solving today's problem as opposed to tomorrow's a lot of time.
Do you want to get like the dirt under your fingernails?
You know, I've gotten poison oak multiple times and insect bites. You learn to deal with it, but right now I have as much fun driving my tractor, bush hogging, clearing stumps as I've done anything. It's just fun right now for me.
It's so weird how that happens. Yeah. I've actually had to get back into what I used to do as an electrician when I was in my early 20s, late teens, pulling wire. This year especially, I had to get my hands dirty big time.
It'll make a man of you.
But, you know, I don't mind it now. I don't mind it because I've already got out of my system what I wanted in radio.
Yeah.
You know, and that was what frustrated me back then in my 20s when I was an electrician. Was knowing that I still had something to do creatively, you know, expressing my artistic sense with audio production, video production. It's out of my system now. So when I have to get up on a ladder or a lift and I got to put some lights in, I'm like, cool, man.
Hey, what do you know about solar? We're trying to wire up our barn to just be purely solar out there. Can you make that work?
I can. I know a guy who can. Yeah. Brad Lee. He's got a solar arm of his company.
I love this. Brad, is it Bradley or Bradley?
Brad Lee. So B-R-A-D-L-E-A.
Space.
Yeah. And if anything, actually, as he comes to Nashville, I'm going to, this is the thing that I do with my podcast clients, guests that I have on.
Yeah.
I have you on. I love you. I'm going to start like promoting your name and shouting it from the mountaintops to my other podcast clients. Him being one of them, like, dude, you got to have Arnie on.
Yeah, it's what the networkers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I've got, you know, Brian Covey needs to have you on. You familiar with Brian's show?
Oh, man, I feel like you know everybody I don't.
There's like a whole like different sect of Nashville entrepreneurs. Like there's a little bubble happening in the metro area.
What, you know, Nashville, I'm a member of Nashville EO, which is the Entrepreneurs Organization Nashville.
Yep.
We're 300 members strong. We're the largest chapter, I think, in the world now.
Yeah.
But it's not because, I mean, the chapter's good and we have great leadership and management, but it's the market. I mean, Nashville has just attracted this energy that is of creators that are just, you know, doing it in every way, shape, and form.
It's a very robust entrepreneurial market here.
Yeah.
Brad, when he comes here, he had told me, he says, because his brand is really blowing up. He's got a 1.5 million followers on TikTok. I think I want to say 800,000 on Instagram. So, and he really, everything he puts out just gets tons of engagement. So he's a up and coming influencer for a reason. He's got the battle scars. He's got the pedigree. And people, the things he says, people give a lot of weight to. So he says he comes out here. He says, he doesn't realize, and I told him this, how big he is. And he's like, you're exactly right. I come out here and people recognize me on the street. And I go,
that's
really?
Nice,
And he goes, That doesn't happen in Vegas, and that's where he lives. Mm-hmm. I said, Brad, there's just a more robust entrepreneurial community here.
Yeah, they're thinking about it, all the time,
And it's just something that's just a thing here.
Yeah.
People feel the freedom.
Nashville's changed so much in good ways. And like I used to think of it as a smaller town. I feel like I knew everybody in town.
Yeah.
But the town's triple now. It seems that way, probably at least double.
Now, you're from Mississippi originally?
Went to school in Mississippi. We grew up in our small, very small town in Arkansas. And just ended up here because of a parent of my fraternity little brother who introduced me to some people.
Oh, really? So you came here teens, 20s?
I came here, graduated college, moved here.
Oh, right on.
I'll do this quick. So Jerry McCoyne, who started Athlon Magazine when he was at University of Tennessee, was the father of my good friend Mac McCoyne, who is my little brother and at Ole Miss in the fraternity. Jerry McCoyne, I come into town. He says, takes me downtown. He meets Ralph Brown,
yeah,
a legendary insurance salesman here in Nashville. Ralph Brown walks me across the street like in 20 minutes, introduces me to her name just ran out of my head.
It always happens.
Woman vice president at the bank, at First American Bank.
Okay.
She walks me upstairs, introduces me to the president, Dana McClendon. I talked to him for 30 minutes, who happened to be an ATO at South Carolina. He says, I like you. We're going to offer you a job. I'm like, I love this town. What a great town.
Back when everything was done on a handshake.
Yes. And that's, which is good and bad, right? Back then, the first two questions everybody asks is, where'd you go to high school and who's your daddy? Literally was the first. This was 89, 90.
Yeah.
First two questions. Now it's, where are you from and what are you doing? Like, it's just two different. It's a different mindset now than old money Nashville to new money Nashville. Both had their time and their place and their purpose. I like this Nashville a lot.
I was about to ask, which one do you like better?
Yeah, I like this Nashville. Opportunity is open to everyone here.
Yeah. It really is. I mean, it's
seemingly.
But the energy, it's a tactile energy almost that you can feel, and you intrinsically know that there's possibility all around you.
Yeah.
Just by talking to people.
So anyway, thanks for the questions. Thanks for your interest. Thanks for liking Better Book Club. thanks for still having your shirt. Good times, man.
Well, with that being said, we got to at least ask this.
What's your problem?
I mean, do you even have any problems? I mean, it sounds like you got it all together.
Yeah, so many. Look, the number one problem we have with Better Book Club right now is I'll be on a show like this, or you'll talk about it offline, someone will sign up, and then I need them to actually do something.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just sign up and magic's going to happen. Like culture reflects leadership. And here's what people do. They say, I'm going to be in charge. Mm-hmm. So when the leader says they're in charge, that means nothing's going to happen.
Right.
You have to have a champion for this thing inside the company that's not in leadership. We don't want to push this thing down. We want to grow it up. And so my problem is getting people to take action on the decisions they make, as opposed to just throwing shade to it. So if look at Better Book Club, if it's for you, do something.
And it's just simply the saying, you can be, for a dealership, you can be a salesperson, you could be a service writer, somebody that's below middle management.
Absolutely.
Can run with it.
Our receptionist was typically in charge of Better Book Club.
Oh, wow.
Right. And I think now one of their videographer at CJ now runs it there at the agency. Like, it doesn't, we don't need, who's a great human being, but they don't have to be the vice president of something.
Right.
In fact, they'll do a better job if they're not.
Right.
And the system becomes an internal system as opposed to top down, push down. Don't put HR in charge of it. Don't tell yourself you're in charge of it. Give it to a champion that's just wanting to show what they can do with an opportunity.
I'm really glad we had this conversation, because that's the way I can position it now.
Yeah.
The next time I'm in front of, one of my dealership clients or something, I could say, hey, listen, have somebody, the assistant run with it, whoever she may be.
Anyone that's not in leadership is a better choice than anyone in leadership. Champions make culture programs work. I know we're done, but any program you have that's culture, give it to a champion. If you give it to a champion and let them develop a checklist and give them permission to fail and give them 9 months to do it, success will happen.
Nice. Very cool. Well, always a pleasure to have you on. Check out worthdoingwrong.com.
Yeah.
And betterbookclub.com.
Boom, boom.
And those links are going to be in the description, as well as whatsyourproblempodcast.com. Please give us a rating, like, subscription. Sharing is caring. We really do appreciate that. Arnie, always a great time to hang with you. And now that you're down in Colombia, we'll have to come by the farm.
I know. Come visit. We're going to be growing lavender. We're going to be growing pecans. Ooh. We hope to have some bees. There are other things in the works.
So. Is there a website for that too?
Trailhollow.com.
Oh my goodness.
Trailhollow.com. check it out. A few picks now, but more to come.
Awesome, man. We'll check that out. We'll put that link in the description as well. Arnie, as always, thanks, man, for coming by.
Thank you, sir.